is Siren FM.
Or indeed, as we occasionally like to say,
the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Editions with Alex Levchuk and the Midweek Drivettes on Siren 107.3 FM. A 21st century radio programme with 23rd century philosophies.
Splendid. OK, so International Women's Day, you heard about it on the news. Did you do anything to celebrate it, Natasha?
No.
Fair enough. Kayleigh?
I'm just going to keep being myself.
Interesting sort of perspective, and why not? Indeed, we could have International Kayleigh Umfraville Day. It'll happen. Holly?
I did it the same as any other day, because every day is Women's Day.
Yes, Holly.
You see, that's clearly the message is coming through in more ways than we've kind of come to appreciate it. Coming up very soon, we'll be going back to America again to actually connect with Tara Bennett. Tara Bennett, ace writer and general all-round wonderful author of so many delightful things. It's just, quite frankly, sort of just amazing, really. And of course, the SFX West Coast editor, East Coast editor. She does all sorts of things, because celebrating not just International Women's Day, but 20 years since the stake was first picked up by Sarah Michelle Gellar, and this happened.
Life's a show, and we all play our part. And when the music starts, we open up our hearts. It's all right. If some things come up wrong, we'll sing a happy song, and you can sing along. Where there's life, there's hope. Every day's a gift. Wishes can come true. We're so warm. You work so hard all day to be like others. So that's my refrain. I live in hell, 'cause I've been expelled from heaven. I think I was in heaven. So give me something. We'll be right back.
Life's not a song. Life isn't bliss. Life is just this. It's living. You'll get along. The pain that you feel, you only can heal by living. You have to go on living. So one of us is living.
That's James Masters, of course, and Sarah Michelle Gellar, because that was the musical version once more with feeling of a certain series that has been eulogised about, developed, featured Jane Espenson. And the best person that we can actually go to actually address this whole sequence is whom, Natasha Armstrong?
Oh, our very lovely next guest.
Who is?
Tara.
Exactly. Tara Bumdier. No, that was an old Avengers gag. We won't go that way. It's Tara Bennett from SFX Magazine and more. Tara, welcome back to the Midweek Drive.
Thanks for having me. I'm on such a wonderful day celebrating such a lovely character. I appreciate it.
Exactly. Well, we thought International Women's Day, we could have done Scully from The X-Files. We could have done Sandra Hura. There's a whole stack of women that we can celebrate. But we thought, let's do Buffy. Ties in with oh so many ways, especially when you bear in mind that the quartet of Midweek Drivettes in the studio, that of course would be Martina Vieca. Welcome back, Martina.
Hello.
And Kelly Umfraville.
Hello.
And Holly McGrattan.
Hi.
And Natasha Armstrong.
Hi there.
We're all kind of post-95 children when they actually emerged on this planet Earth. So, I mean, I couldn't believe, Natasha, that I was hearing in the pre-show chat that I believe, was it Kaylee or Holly, had never even heard of Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
No, Holly. I've heard of it, I just never watched it.
Heard, but never watched. Did Buffy cross over to Stettin in Poland, Martina?
I'm not sure, but it hasn't crossed over to me, I'm sorry.
See. So what joys they have to actually sort of deal with the inversion of female stereotypes and the way in which Joss Whedon took a movie that flopped miserably, turned it into a little TV series that could and did, and probably led the way for his fantastic work on series like Firefly and Dollhouse and the Avengers movie scenarios, etc. I think basically it was all put together so that you could put together another classic article in the current edition of SFX magazine.
Yes, I like to think that that's the whole point. That I actually, Buffy was the thing that changed my career. I was a TV producer back in the 90s and the early 2000s, and my first printed article was for the Buffy the Vampire Slayer magazine, the official one that Fox did, and then I wrote extensively for that magazine for the run of the show and then after, and then wrote for Angel Magazine and covered a ton of the writers that have all gone off and made their own shows. And so, yeah, it's really from a place of it's just one of my top three television shows of all time to actually impacting my life. And then also seeing how all of those writers from Joss's writing room have gone off and made some of the most beloved shows in the current golden age of television, and the influence is mighty 20 years later.
This is one of the key things about it, of course, that we were talking before the news slot with Dylan Reese, who's writing about Doctor Who and the way that the fans kind of took ownership of the whole series. But in the case of Buffy, it opened up a whole new opportunity, a bit like genre fiction did with Star Trek, with other series, The X-Files, of course, we mentioned. I really feel that. I mean, Natasha, from your own perspective, is this something that is something that appeals to you about science fiction in general as a writer?
Yeah, definitely. First of all, congratulations, because the edition we've just been leafing through is amazing. It's a great,
it's a great edition.
Got. Yeah, certainly. I think that in terms of the fans certainly tended to latch onto this than they did a lot of other things, certainly around at the time in terms of its genre. It'd be interesting to see how much it probably influenced some of the latter stuff coming through. I mean, we had all of the further stuff with a lot of the L.J. Smith books and a lot of the productions that came out of that, and in that sort of you know, almost undeady kind of vampire thick that kind of came out of it. It'd be interesting to see how that set the bar in comparison.
And of course, the
definitely. I think you can point to the book series like Twilight, and a lot of those writers have said, you know, watching a heroine, a modern day heroine that wasn't kind of portrayed in the gothic sense, but she was modern. She was reflective of, you know, the world that she was in, and it influenced a ton of characters that have come afterwards, both literary and television wise.
And indeed, that whole notion of the lead female protagonist of Katniss Everdeen and others who kind of benefited, I think, from that particular perspective. We see that's the Hunger Games scenario. Little plug, courtesy of a good self, Tara, but I'll mention it to Ed Gross and Mark Altman because they've had a cover reveal of Slayers, Your First Look at Slayers and Vampires, an unauthorized oral history of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel.
Yes, yes, they're friends of mine. They did a wonderful two-volume Star Trek 50th anniversary book that came out, two volumes last year, and they both are journalists, and Mark also writes for television, and they both have covered Buffy extensively over the range of their career, so they were able to go back to some of the actors and writers and get their perspective 20 years later, as well as collate a lot of the interviews that they've done over the years. So they did a great, if you love Trek, go find their Trek book, and then look forward this fall to their Buffy.
Specifically,
one, I know I am.
Trek the first 25 years, and then the next 25 yeah. years. Genius.
Yeah, they're great books.
50
awesome
years.
Awesome books if you love Trek, really, really. All done in oral history style, which I think is really wonderful when you can go back and look at a legacy property that has history and that, you know, once you get past the PR, political correctness of saying things when you're working on a show 10 years later, you can talk about your experiences in the context of what, you know, the iteration of what they worked in, either the movie or TV show, and the influence it's had on culture, what it was like to work on the show. So I'm excited to see what they're going to say about the Buffy team as well.
Indeed so. But Tara, it wouldn't be a classic Tara Bennett link if we didn't have the opportunity to go, ah. And so, courtesy of Tara Bennett, I'm going to actually pull up, yes, it's the otter scenario. And here we have river otter pups born at the Oregon Zoo. So we'll just actually click and see this little thing manifest in its whole system. If you'd like to talk us through as a sort of commentary, please, Natasha, in terms of what we're seeing at the birth of some river otter pups here.
Well, there's an absolutely adorable huge mommy otter and several babies are now. I think there's one at the minute that's sort of come out, and she's kind of cuddling it, which is really, really sweet, and giving it a sniff. I can't see if is there another one now, or is there still just one?
We're not quite sure, but
there'll be another one. Fast forward a little bit, and then there's the cutest little twins. You've just outed my procrastination. That's what I do on social media. Yeah. I will go find otter videos and post them up, so you'll know what Tara should be doing is not what she's doing. She's watching really cute otter videos.
Fundamentally, what better way to actually sort of celebrate the joy of life and indeed International Women's Day than actually getting in touch with the feminine side and actually showing the birth of otters? Kaylee, your thoughts?
That is so cute.
As you see. Echoed in so many wonderful words. Holly?
Yeah, they are adorable.
I understand that, Martina, you didn't comment on this in the news. You had all sorts of other things, but not the birth of baby otters.
We should have.
Yeah, exactly. It's definitely got to be a kind of consideration for times to come as far as otter scenarios are concerned. But anyway, that's we can breathe now and move on to the next sort of segment of the whole sequence, which, of course, can have a nice little bridge by using this 20-second ident.
They got the mustard.
Works so well, don't you think, Tara, in terms of, you know, setting the scene, getting in the dry.
That's a wonderful David Fury, just so you know as well. He was a producer and a writer on the show. He got his little cameo there to sing the mustard song. And he's now on The Tick with Ben Edlund. Ben Edlund's Tick that had a live-action version of the show from the comic book. They're doing a new one for Amazon, and they're both on the show. So the Buffy legacy, they still continue to work together.
Precisely. Natasha, you've seen the Buffy series, I presume.
Yes.
So what floated your boat about the whole combination of Willow and Xander and that bloke who went on to star in Merlin, Anthony Stewart Head. Well, he did more than coffee commercials. And, of course, he often dropped into the SFX offices in Bath. He's a nice style. And, of course, he was Ripper in the series that never quite got made, the series that was supposed to sort of follow through. But never mind. What floated your boat about the series?
I loved, in terms of just the way that the actors seemed to gel together, I loved that in terms of the general interaction and the parts, just the different parts, the fact that you did have, in some respect, I know when I watched it, I was about 10, 11, I watched some of the repeats.
Did you feel empowered? Did you actually go around Nottingham looking for vampires to slay?
No, I never got my hands on a crossbow, unfortunately. But I just loved that it was... She was just seemed like a normal teenage girl in a lot of... Do you know what I mean? In some of it. And then the other hand, she'd go out and fight vampires at night. And I just loved that. It was empowering in some ways, watching, you know, watching it on the TV. It was just... It was a good life balance, I think, she got, as I say, with the monster slaying and the general being a girl.
And did you catch the musical episode, which, of course, we've been having sequences from, the Once More With Feeling?
No, I never caught the musical.
She never has caught the musical version, the sort of agony that we went through in so many ways. Your favourite episode, Tara? I mean, is that too much sort of, or did you have a particular season which you thought, yes, I always went for that? And I thought, when they actually brought in the sister, who was never a sister at all, but was the sister and then was the sister,
Dawn.
Got very confusing. Exactly, yes. Dawn, yeah.
Yes. you know, it's hard to say because I love the way that the tone of that show was able to do full horror, action, comedy. The ensemble, as Natasha said, it was so fantastic. They were able to really just tonal shift within themes on that. So sometimes I like popping on a funny, one of the more funny ones, like Pangs, which is the Thanksgiving one. Then sometimes, you know, Once More With Feeling is a great, you know, operetta.
Let's face it, it's got more hummable tunes than La La Land. But then
you're listening to Siren.
Exactly, just burst in there, you know, like some strange, bizarre conception, really. But still, sorry, Emma Stone.
It's true. I still have that soundtrack. I don't really ever get anything signed. But that's the one Buffy piece of paraphernalia that I actually have signed by almost the entire cast, and I love that. I have that little piece, but I really loved the end of season the end of season five, which was technically, if the show had not gotten picked up, going to be the series end. And I still can pop that one on and I just cry, you know, with Buffy and what she does. I won't spoil it for those of you. Many of you have not seen the series, so the choices that she makes and the emotion of that episode is really fabulous.
Put simply, does she go to the University of Lincoln or does she go elsewhere? I mean, that's the clear thing. Really. It's easy choice, and it's such a traumatic time as well. I mean, Holly, you can identify with this. You know, Brighton. Do you go to Lincoln or do you do something else? It's
very, yeah, exactly.
Martina, you've been quite happily reading the SFX magazine there, so you've been perusing through that whole thing. Any questions from yourself or Tara?
I do have a question.
Go.
This looks very, very cool. I'll definitely probably watch it because I was into vampires when I was a teenager.
Really?
Still a teenager.
Let's face it, you know, Poland, vampires, they go together so well.
Yeah.
I mean, it's essential. You know, you're stunned walking through the streets of Stettin without an average vampire. It's a low night. It's not fair.
Exactly. My question, so when did this series stop? When did it end? Or does it still...
It ran for 7 seasons and it finished in 2003. So it's been off the air for quite some time as well. But it's really had the opportunity with streaming. It's on Netflix, so a ton of people revisit it, you know, or they're based on the recommendations, because it kind of is, you know, the apex point of a lot of the genre that we see now. You know, the tones, being able to kind of mix all the different kinds of comedic elements, you know, realism, you know, like you said, she's a flawed, regular human character, young girl that's going through all the atrocities of being a teenager into young adulthood. And it's still one of the shows, I feel like I can put it back on, and even though it started in 1997 and ended in 2003, it's not dated. The show, even with its quirky Whedon-type of dialogue and, you know, even with the way, you know, they were dressed and things, there's some things that are dated, but really it kind of holds up really, really well. And I think that's just the strength of the writing and the performances. And so I always do recommend go back. You know, I don't say that with a lot of genre shows. Some shows are, you can feel the age, but I feel like Buffy is remained iconic for a reason.
We're staying, actually, with the science fiction theme for probably the remainder of the show in many ways, but our other Los Angeles correspondent this evening, at least, Phil Leonis, is currently eulogising about The Prisoner and the 50th anniversary of The Prisoner TV series, and Annette Andre is taking part in Seattle, and you know, he's done an entire Chilpack Hollywood Hour podcast this week, totally dedicated just to The Prisoner. And he's really gone...
Oh, wow! Yeah,
it's magical scenarios on that basis. And yet, I'm thinking... Could you not say the same thing about Buffy? I mean, I know Phil's point would be, well, this is 50 years for The Prisoner, and that had right. 17 episodes, and it said so much and so on. Didn't Buffy also kind of, in its own way, also develop and revolutionise the way in which we kind of view generic television, Tara?
Oh, I absolutely agree. I think, you know, The Prisoner, actually, we have the Prisoner vinyl in this house. I just listened to it the other day, which is amazing. White vinyl. It's very cool. But I think that what The Prisoner did in terms of storytelling, in terms of challenging the audience with shows that are directly influenced, like Lost, I think Buffy has done exactly the same thing, especially for shows that show a female lead character, and also a character that, you know, the show is subversive in that it never made her the victim. She was proactive even when she was flawed and made mistakes and maybe some poor choices at times with relationships or things that she wanted to do that, you know, kind of tried to circumvent being the Slayer and the Chosen One. And I think all of that really influenced a lot of the characters, whether it's genre or non-genre, after Buffy, and we're still feeling it. We're still feeling it. I think, like I said before, so many of the writers that came from Joss's room have gone on to make TV shows, and that voice and that perspective of character and female character has been continued through the shows that they've continued to make. You know, Steve DeKnight made Spartacus and was the first year on Daredevil. You've got Jane Espenson, who worked with Ron Moore in the Battlestar Galactica world and is on Once Upon a Time now. You've got Marty Noxon, who was the showrunner when Joss went off to do Firefly, and she has several shows on the air now and has worked on some of the biggest TV shows, from Shonda Rhimes shows to her own creations. And there's so many. I don't think there's anybody in those writers' rooms from Buffy and then on to Angel that haven't gone on to make their own shows. And that continues. You know, what the strength of that show was, they all learned something about that and have put it into the DNA of their shows. And so I don't think it's possible, especially when you're watching a show from someone that was in a Joss Whedon writing room, to not feel a little bit of that voice and that legacy that continues through with their work today.
I was part of an SFX event at Norbrick Castle in Blackpool back in the day, and when Gemma's Masters took to the stage, you would have thought it was Beatlemania reversed. It was astounding.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
It's strange.
The Spike lovers, I went to many a convention back in the day when I was covering Buffy and Angel magazine. He was as rock star as you're going to get.
It was extraordinary. James Masters did all sorts of things. And curious enough, in some ironic way, probably one of the reasons why our outside broadcast mascot is named Spike, except he's a hedgehog and, of course, doesn't connect with vampires at all, as Natasha will attest to. It's
a different style. You never know what
he
can get up to.
It flows. Holly, any thoughts from yourself in terms of as a filmmaker, as a writer, as a script writer, and again, you know, the sort of inspiration that we've been talking about? Many people actually just say, all I need to be inspired is to read a Tara Bennett book. It can be Big Trouble in Little China or anything, really.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that they kind of, for the characters, it was their kind of break for all of them. It was nice that they all managed to do something.
Except like, people are saying, what's happened to Sarah Michelle Gellar? That's how it started. I mean, you know, I mean, Scooby-Doo, yes, two movies, but other than that, never mind. I'm sure there'll be a role for her somewhere. There's always a midweek drive at slot going, I suppose, in the summer. It's just a thought. Anyway, we'll just put that out there into the cosmos. Tara, in the near future, we're going to try and attempt to connect with you via Skype, because I think it can be done. I know it's done via our American cousins. You know, I didn't want to risk it today, but it means we're in that handover stage now between yourself and, of course, the current editor of SFX, who indeed has managed to, through the medium of Photoshop, Photoshop him into his usual marvellous sort of scenario in the Buffy Vampire Slayer edition, current edition of SFX magazine, which is sensational in all sorts of ways. But before we go to that, and the last two questions, a bit of a musical question for you, Tara. We could go in a kind of reverse notion back to Once More With Feelings with the overture to Once More With Feelings and Going Through the Motions. Or alternatively, given that it's a nice, interesting take on the whole genre, and I thought, should I go and see Logan? Should I go and see this particular one? We could actually have Who is the Batman from Patrick Stump, the Lego Batman, or indeed Robin's I Found You, also from the Lego Batman. Where do you think? Are we Lego Batmaning, or are we Joss Whedoning for Buffy the Vampire Slayer? It's entirely up to yourself, Tara.
You know, I'll stay on theme with the lady. I will stay with Buffy as a great lead-in to my fearless leader, Rich, who is my editor extraordinaire, and miss him so, being able to see him, but hopefully at San Diego as our annual face-to-face. So I'll just voice-to-voice now and tip it over to the wonderful Rich Edwards.
Of course, you see, the thing is, Tara, it's time you came back to Britain. It's time, you know, we came back to Blighty.
I know, I love
it. And exactly, and sort of made time to come in and be in the studio here and join us and share the love of otters, you know, across the world and the globe. You know, that's otters as well.
I would love to.
To share the love of the Ottoman Empire, which is a completely different scenario and has got nothing to do with furry friends at all. Could do, but, you know.
Perfect.
It's a different line. Last two questions, please. Natasha.
Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
As always, yes. Thank you.
Wonderful. And can we see you again on the show sometime soon?
I'd love to. Thank you. Yes.
Personally, I can't listen to a Tara Bennett phone link without feeling like I can take on the world.
Aww.
Yay!
Every single night, the same arrangement, I go out and fight the fight. Still I always feel the strangest estrangement, nothing here is real, nothing here is right. I've been making shows of trading blows, just hoping no one knows. But I've been going through the motions, walking through the part. Nothing seems to penetrate my heart. I was always brave and kind of righteous, now I find I'm wavering. Crawl out of your grave, you find this fight just doesn't mean a thing.
She ain't got that swing.
Thanks for noticing.
She is pretty well with fiends from hell, but lately we can tell that she's just going through the motions, faking it somehow. She's not even half the girl she now.
Will I stay this way forever? Sleepwalk through my life's endeavor.
How can I repay
whatever I don't wanna be? Going through the motions, losing all my drive. I can't even see if this is really me. And I just wanna be.
In many ways, the collective editorials of Richard Edwards will make an ideal coffee table book, I'm sure, over the years. And when you start off with such classic lines as "So with Sunnydale set to turn 20 on the 10th of March," doesn't it make you feel old? I know. We're celebrating one of the seminal shows of SFX's lifetime in a big way. We've spoken to veterans of the series, rounded up its best moments, and got Russell T. Davis to reveal how Buffy influenced New Who. Splendid stuff. Richard Edwards is back online. How are you, Richard?
Oh, I'm very well, thanks. How are you?
Very good. I'm particularly interested in the way that you actually are just resting on James Marsters' shoulder in the Buffy the Vampire sort of sequence there. Yes, that is Richard the Man Edwards there with a wonderful kind of blue and white checked shirt, just resting his hand on James Marsters' show. Or was that somehow photoshopped in?
Or time travel, who knows? You know.
Exactly. Well, it's clearly a sort of way of just keeping the magic going, Richard. That's the important thing. So here we are in March, and SFX continues to go from strength to strength. I did paraphrase the SFX Games Radar Asara there with, "I can't watch it without feeling like I can take on the world." The Slayer's final speech, the best bit of Buffy the Vampire Slayer Season 7. We've already shared some of the thoughts of the team in the studio, all of whom, Richard, you'd be delighted to know. Let's do a calculation. Buffy started in 97, so how old would you have been, Natasha?
Two.
Natasha would have been two. Kaylee?
Zero.
Holly?
Yeah, months.
Awesome. And Martina, not born zero. At all. No. So it doesn't make us feel old, does it? Or chronologically gifted at all, that particular sort of statement for midweek drivettes, who were, it's a whole... I mean, how can it be 20 years, Richard?
I know. It's one of those, you can't believe it, can you? It always felt kind of new and fresh. And yeah, it's just kind of happened, I guess. So many things. It's like the X-Files, you know, well, all these things.
That... 20 years from that. And, of course, again, to mention the upcoming correspondent and indeed director and producer of The Lady Killers, Phil Leonis, 50 years since The Prisoner.
Yeah.
Will SFX be, come September and that sort of time, given that there's a massive prisoner con that's taking place in Seattle and various other things? Will you be looking to cover the Patrick McGoohan routine, or is it a case of, no, it wasn't that influential after all?
Oh, we will be doing something on The Prisoner. I mean, The Prisoner is one of those shows. It's one of the seminal shows, and it's really so important. I mean, and the thing is, it still looks amazing. It's because it was kind of always out of time a little bit. It still looks fantastic.
Well, again, I don't know, Natasha, if you've seen the interview in the current edition of SFX magazine with Adrian Tchaikovsky.
Yes,
exactly.
I have.
Of course, you know, sends best wishes to yourself, of course, the author of Children in Time. Children of Time. How was the reading coming on with Children of Time?
I think it was the
Bear and the Serpent, the wolf. That I'm talking about the Children of Time sort of text. Did you read The Bear and the Serpent as well?
No, I'm reading that one, and it's going very well.
Very well, you see, the literary. Anyway, questions for Richard Edwards.
Yes, just looking, having a lovely flick through your magazine, I noticed you've got quite a little bit about Logan, the new film that's out. In terms of, obviously, Hugh Jackman's done now, do you reckon that's it for the Wolverine character, or do you reckon in 10 years' time they'll wheel out another young actor to do it, or what do you think in terms of that?
I would say never, though I think Wolverine's in a sort of slightly odd position. It's probably along with Iron Man that they're the only superheroes who are, where the actor is so sort of entwined with the character, you know, where they've kind of established it, sort of made the role their own. I think no one would really mind if you recast Chris Hemsworth's part in Thor, or you'd probably even get away with Captain America with Chris Evans. But I think Wolverine, it made Hugh Jackman. He's so sort of one with the character. I think they'd have to leave it a little while first.
So I think that's probably a no at this particular stage. So. Never mind, but it's working its way through that. Interesting enough, in terms of the online, Logan was full of digital doubles, and you never noticed. But one of the interesting lines that seems to be working through the whole process is Star Trek Discovery's new captain is Lucius Malfoy, and this couldn't possibly spell disaster.
Good old Jason Isaacs, yeah.
Jason Isaac is going to be the captain of the Discovery and is Slytherin. Well, yes, and Hannah Brown isn't here. You know, astounding. You know, no sign of Hannah Brown to actually sort of comment on that whole system, but still, never mind. Yeah, so the official line is Jason Isaacs will play Captain Lorca, leader of the USS Discovery in her pre-original series voyages.
I think the interesting thing, though, is he's not the main character.
No.
So he's focusing on the first officer. played by Sonequa Martin-Green from The Walking Dead. He's not. Although he's in charge of the ship, he's not going to be like Picard or Kirk, where he's like very much the sort of top billing. So that would be interesting to see how that works.
And of course, you know, they might decide to put it off and not actually release it for another year or so. It seems to be putting it back in time and time again.
It does, doesn't it? I think he's stuck in some kind of time vortex. Yeah.
Now, tragically, and again, I have to say, mea culpa from this particular perspective, the second Telefantasy and Society Symposium, which we're hosting at the University of Lincoln in a week and a half's time, astoundingly, we're not featuring Richard Edwards this time. I know. We've changed it around a little bit, Richard. You've got Sam Stowe, we've got David J. Howe, we've got Daphne Ashbrook, we've got George Mann. We'll obviously be celebrating Graham Harper in terms of directing and various other sort of factors. But we've got a bloke from the other magazine, Starburst, coming in this time around. I'm confessing on air, Richard, because you know I woke up middle of the night thinking, what have I done? You know, we're doing Telefantasy in Society 2 with no Richard Edwards.
We'll only find out the implications, you know, when the world stops turning.
Well, this is the
criticism. We're like Superman's going turning the Earth the wrong way.
Exactly. You know, all I can say is I think we're putting it right, and we'll make sure you get an invite for Telefantasy in Society 3. You know, it's sort of Stone Tape Symposium and so on. So we'll have to move over to Bath and clearly connect with him on that sort of basis. That's the key thing, the city of Bath. Share with us why the current edition of SFX magazine is absolutely essential for not just lovers of Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Adrian Tchaikovsky, but a whole heap of other good stuff as well, Richard.
Well, it's one of those issues where I think a lot of things come together, because we've got Logan, we've got Power Rangers. Now you're testing me, aren't you? obviously, you mentioned Adrian Tchaikovsky. A lot on Iron Fist, of course, the fourth of the Marvel Netflix shows, which starts in just a week, actually.
And will you be binge watching it? Will you say it's all there? Woof! Let's just watch the whole thing immediately. You know, like people did with. And I'm still actually working my way through Jessica, and even Daredevil. I have to say, in terms, yeah, you know, I just savor the sort of moments where I'll just all in one go. What will you be doing, Natasha? Or is it a case of no? I'm sorry, I'm DC. Actually, yeah, you are Marvel. You're not DC. So
yes.
So will you be sort of saying yes? I'll go with this.
I'm one of those people where I try not to binge watch because I think it ruins your viewing experience. I kind of like the anticipation and the wondering what's going to happen. So I'll probably slowly kind of, you know, work my way through it as I would like a normal weekly television series. So,
Kaylee, yeah. Your thoughts as a media production student?
I think I'd like maybe do one every day, just so you remember what the story is, and then you're into it more.
See, one every day as opposed to the old school one every week. It's far too long, really, to wait for you 7 whole days. Holly.
Yeah, I agree with Natasha. I think binge watching is, you know, a sad way to watch something. You know, just a feeling of just wanting to finish it. So I'm gonna, if I watch it, I'll try and pace it.
Binge watching a sad way to watch things. That's a very loaded state with that. And what about yourself, Martina? Do you binge watch or series? No, I'm first year journalism student. I don't have time to even watch television. What's that?
I don't know.
I'm sure. I mean, Richard, from your own point of view, are you more of a binger, or is it a case of no, I like to savour?
I do like a binge. I mean, I don't often get the opportunity of sort of squeezing, finding the sort of window to have a good binge watch. But when something like Stranger Things come out, I mean, I did that in a couple of nights. When it's something that you really love, just having the opportunity to go straight on to the next one is amazing. Yeah. And I remember watching Battlestar Galactica in not very much time at all. So I think having the option is good. And I think they've changed the way they make television a little bit. I mean, certainly Netflix, they don't give you your recaps. You have to remember quite a lot that probably if you were watching it once a week, you might miss a little bit. You might have to go back and watch the previous one. So, you know, I can see the advantages in both directions, which makes it sound like I'm colossally sitting on the fence.
Which is a nice way to actually, you know, sometimes it's important to get the sort of central equilibrium balance there, which is very important. From the sad news department, I was quite disappointed. I know it's not in your purview, Richard, but still it's Future Publishing's ambition that basically the Crime publication has stopped. Crime Scene has ceased to be. But the good news is the subscription is going to be transferred over to Total Film. There we are. I've done my little bit of corporate advertising there for you in terms of Total Film still lives. Crime Fiction, sadly no more. It's been murdered. Sorry, do you see what I did there, Richard? Yeah, it's been murdered.
Yes, no,
nice. Yeah, I probably won't go down with the executives, but I thought I'd drop it in. What the hey, you know, we make these comments. A little line from Tara. She's looking forward to meeting your good self, fearless leader, at San Diego. So that's what I think. I think that was a keen thing that she wanted to have passed on. We're hopeful that we might
be
able
to... Did you say fearless leader? I prefer imperious leader.
Okay. Well, I tell you what. Next time, we're going to try a little experiment in which we might have either... Well, actually, yes, we'll have Tara on Skype and you via that, so you can actually speak to each other and join us in live on air. How does that grab you, Richard Edwards? Actually,
that would be very, very cool.
A live interconnecting scenario from that point of view. You see, Richard has been also taking part in other podcasts. I haven't opened it up with him recently because I thought, no, you know, I can't... It's not like I'm being unfaithful, really. You know, there are lots of shows that are available, but first thing, Richard, you have been busy in the podcast field as well, have you not?
I've done a couple, yes.
Exactly. And you know, we have obviously a kind of pastoral sort of guidance for this, because I mean, other podcasts are available, but we feel that the Midweek Drive just has that extra little smidgen of something. Anyway, so that's why we thought we'd ramp it up a little bit more and actually look to have that mega connection. Shortly, it'll be Phil Leonis's turn to eulogise about what he's done with the Los Angeles Breakfast Club today, whether he's got any thoughts on the 20th anniversary of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. The Prisoner seems to have got a thumbs up all round, really, in terms of a magical system. But inevitably, the last two questions need to be put to you. Martina, I think it's your turn to actually sort of throw them in a magical way across the country from the East Coast to the West Coast to our fine soul, Richard Edwards, the editor of SFX Magazine.
Sure. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link with us this evening?
I have, very much, thanks.
And will you join us soon?
Oh, I hope so. That would be lovely.
That's great.
A round of applause for Richard Edwards, please. You know, worked through so many delightful scenarios. The current edition of SFX is still available. It's online, and the official strapline is it's the world's longest running... No, it's the world's finest. It's the world's number one.
That's the one.
Yes, yeah. World's number one science fiction magazine. Fantasy magazine. You can get this Bratton scenario for that one. Actually, one last little task for yourself, Richard. Musical. Would you like Who is the Batman, Patrick Stump, or more of Johnny Cash and Hurt in a kind of Logan-esque way?
I'd go for Johnny Cash and Hurt. Magnificent record.
I hurt myself today to see if I still feel. I focus on the pain, the only thing that's real. The needle a million miles away. I would keep myself. I would find a way.
Well, I think the message is quite clear in many ways. Lego Batman just hasn't had a leg to stand on.
10:30 a.m. in L.A. can only mean it's time for the Midweek Drive team to welcome their top Californian cultural correspondent, Phil Leonis, back for another segment of Cultural Perspicacity.
And this is the moment where normally I would actually said, after following that through and having something specifically dramatic to follow... You'd see the shots of basically people being gunned down along old-style Hollywood streets, and you'd see emerging from the ashes like some phoenix from the flames, the truly tremendous, tantalisingly wonderful, and somewhat strangely, articulately awesome Phil Leonis. Good evening, Phil.
How did I become like the lead in Hunter?
I'm thinking NCIS Los Angeles, actually. You see, it's not Hunter. Get with the program, exactly. You know,
I can't even keep track. I saw a commercial the other day with Gary Sinise on it, and of course, Gary Sinise, fine actor, you know, first came to great prominence in Forrest Gump. But I saw him in an ad, and I went, well, this is interesting. This is a different character, at least a different toupee for Gary Sinise. And it turns out it's a Criminal Minds spin-off series, and I thought he was in one of those CSI or NCIS spin-offs. So I'm so confused about whether they all take place in the same universe or not. I mean, have 16. I have 16 DVRs running full time, as you know, and I can't even keep up.
Let me sort of break it down for you, okay, and for the listener. You can go back to Daphne Ashbrook. She will be on campus in a week and a half's time, appearing in JAG, okay, Judge Advocate General, which emerges in the Belisarius universe that obviously echoed the joys of Sam Beckett and Quantum Leap. Great series, vastly underrated. Then from JAG, obviously, emerged NCIS, Naval Criminal Investigation Service, with a whole heap of good material happening clearly within the United States of America. David McCallum as Ducky, amongst others. From thence, NCIS Los Angeles emerged with a whole heap of goodies, including, as I say, the assistant to George Clooney's Batman, yes indeed, Chris O'Donnell, taking the lead role as Kay Callan, and LL Cool J as Sam Hanna. And then you've got your very own
Yes,
exactly. You've also got the Lily Holloman starring vehicle, at least in the second season, of NCIS New Orleans. Hopefully, that will sort of set the scene in terms of not...
But wait a minute, now you're implying that those are all in the same universe, and yet Scott Bakula plays two different characters in that universe, so that's confusing. And the second thing is, you want me to believe, honestly, that there was a show called JAG.
Yeah,
I'm not going to buy
10
it.
Years.
All right,
10
hey,
years.
Let me set a stage for you of a panic that swept across your Los Angeles cultural correspondent. Not that long ago, up on the hillside, atop the Griffith Observatory, where I was getting to play before it opened this morning, and I was getting to play with the big telescope up there. And on the
That's
wall,
that's not a euphemism,
because, you know,
by
they,
the way, girls. There is a genuine.
They
big
do
telescope.
All their math. They do all their math in their head up there. You know, there's no computers controlling the telescopes and the machinery up there. It's all done old school mathematics. And so on the wall, as reference, of course, they have a clock for local time. They have a clock for sidereal time, mm-hmm. which is how you tell where, you know, the objects
where,
are supposed to
yeah,
be.
Yeah.
And then they had universal time, which you might still know as Greenwich Mean
exactly.
Time, of course, right?
In case people are confused.
So,
I just want to say...
No, wait. I want to confuse them more beforehand. So the point is that this is 9:30 in the morning for yours truly, mm-hmm. and universal Mean Time, or Greenwich Mean Time for you, shows that it's 7:30 at night.
Mm. Yes.
Up there.
Yes.
And I panicked because that means I've missed the midweek drive. And finally I realized that can't be true. And so although even in an observatory surrounded by scientists, nobody loves a math geek, I had to point out to them that maybe some of their calculations have been wrong because one of their clocks was 2 hours off.
Couple of points. Not that I'm taking the side of scientists here. First of all, I love the way she said sidereal time. It's sidereal time, okay? It's the time in which basically the Earth...
Sidereal.
Tomato, tomato. It's an important juxtaposition. It's how our solar system revolves around the universe and the galaxy. And secondly, next week, you'll be springing forward. So we'll be all over the place in all sorts of ways. It'll still be, as far as we're concerned, 168 hours from now, coming up to...
So you don't change your clock?
Not this weekend, no. No, we don't spring forward.
Okay. So I have no idea whether that means I'm closer to you in time or farther away from you. All I know is I lose an hour of sleep after losing a half hour of sleep today because the Breakfast Club started a half hour early. So I'm so confused and...
Well, don't be, Phil, because we're about to celebrate. It's this Sunday. There's a special preview screening of The Lady Killers.
No, there is not. Now you're making me lose a week. On the 19th of March,
Right. Which is the reason, of course, why Phil Leonis can't attend the Stone Tape Symposium. He can't get on his personalised Learjet that we laid on for him specifically to fly over to actually take part and do the one-on-one with, of course, Daphne Ashbrook, talking about her experiences with JAG, amongst other things, Doctor Who and Malore, etc., because he's got his own film that's being screened in America.
You know, my first car, my friends dubbed my first car the Learjet. But anyway, that's apropos of nothing. And a little less time for you learning the pronunciation of sidereal, and a little more time spent being able to tell the difference between the weeks on a calendar might serve you well.
There you are, you see. It's that kind of joy that sort of just keeps the special relationship going to whole new levels. Have you heard any of the program today, or has it been a case of, no, it's completely new? You could ask me what we've been talking about, and I wouldn't have a clue.
Well, I heard the song. song that you played me in for. That's pretty much it. But what a song, because I don't think we've ever spoken about this terrific Johnny Cash recording, but also about the visit that I took in Nashville to the Johnny Cash Museum, which is a terrific little museum. He once had an enormous museum, House of Cash, I think it was called, and that became defunct during his lifetime. But in Nashville, there's a small museum, but it is detailed. It is a terrific stop. I recommend it to everyone. But there's an entire room and exhibit dedicated just to that song, to that recording, to that music video. And what a powerful song! And it so I wanted to share that with you. I stayed in that room, listening to that song over and over, learning about what that meant to him and the making of the video and the meaning of everything that went into it. It also inspires me to ask, because of course I've missed it, did Cameron finally return? I feel like he's been absent without leave a couple of times in recent memory.
Natasha?
Yes, we did have the delight of Cameron's company at the start of the show.
He doesn't like his Canadian. He's obviously he's full 100% red-blooded USA man now, isn't he? It's very good.
So, in other words, he can't be relied upon to show up. Is that what you're saying? Is that your meaning behind that?
I think you read too much, sir, into that whole production. I'm just giving a little self-congratulatory, metaphorical pat on my back here to congratulate myself that I've managed to...
I would like to point out that Canadians, in my experience, not the most punctual. If you get them to show up, and when I say them, I mean Dean Haglund, if you get them to show up on time, they are inevitably showing up one day or one week early, and the party literally won't be starting till next week. So that's when they're on time, and then the rest.
Strange.
And then if it's
we
the day
had
of,
that, that
very
challenge
late.
With Shane Rimmer, and as far as I'm aware, William Shatner has always been on time. But still, never mind. No, my metaphorical pat on the back was the fact that I've not only managed to do one but two photographs.
Shatner has been way ahead of the times. Always.
Exactly. Do you reset? You can actually listen to the great Shatner doing a wonderful narration for BBC Radio 4, which he actually deals with the whole history of Mars.
You wanted to say something, and then I want to talk about a guest that you need to have on the show. Because have you... Well, anyway, go on with what you're saying.
No, it's just for social media scenarios. You know how I appreciate the social media connections from that point of view. Don't worry, it's not a Penny Evans scenario. She hasn't sent anything in this week. Probably sort of too busy doing other things. Yeah, I know. No.
Cameron's back. Penny's gone. I mean... Are we ever going to have all the kids back home together again at the holidays?
Don't get me started on where Emma Tinson is these days. Probably flipping pancakes, but still, never mind. And as far as Jessica Ward is concerned, she's still on campus, but God knows what.
Rowing.
Happened. Rowing. There you have it. A photograph from both sides of the desk of the Midweek Drivettes, one with Holly, Kaylee and Natasha, and then one with the addition of Martina Vieca, now online and available to be liked and tagged. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Excellent. Is Alex Lefchuk in that photo? Because, you know, Lily Holloman thinks there aren't enough pictures of Alex Lefchuk.
You should check out what we did with Nick Elliott and the Sound and Nick's Vision productions. They were taking photographs from all sorts of angles.
Excellent.
So that's it. Carry on.
Excellent. Rock star photographer Nick Elliott finally giving Alex Lefchuk his due. Have you had a chance to download... You know, I do a weekly podcast. I don't know if you're aware of this.
I've been plugging his podcast several times on the show already.
Already.
Like a shameless sort of thing, really. He didn't even mention...
Showback Hollywood Hour. So you listened to this week's about the prisoner.
He didn't even mention the fact. So when he talked about it, all he said was Annette Andre, who occasionally does the same show in England that I appear on. What did you say? There is only one. Exactly. However, carry on. And I do have a little bone to pick with respect to that, and one of our ace authors who I can't believe you got Robert Fairclough there, but no Alan Stevens, who actually, together with Professor...
Well, I don't have anything. I have nothing to do with the convention, except the fact that I have to explain what the show means to people. What I thought...
May I
maybe...
Now, yeah. Phil, just take a moment to actually just read this mm-hmm. mission statement out from Fallout by Professor Fiona Moore and indeed Alan Stevens. Before we begin, we would like to take a couple of pages to outline our feelings about the prisoner, the areas we will be covering, and how precisely we intend to approach the series in the
subsequent
chapters.
Well, wait a minute. Why wouldn't you save this? Why wouldn't you save this? Because I think you should have this gentleman on your show.
He is.
That's
He's on
I'm
tomorrow
saying.
Morning.
I think you... What, the gentleman running the prisoner convention?
No. But I'm sure if he's a recommendation for you, Phil, we'll have him as well. But probably next week.
See, wouldn't that be... Wouldn't,
also.
I mean, that would have tied in,
yes.
I think, beautifully. This is the reason I was not plugging the Midweek Drive, because I planned to talk to you, and I thought you ought to get this guy on sooner rather than later. And if
exactly.
you already have prisoner guests coming on,
no,
for the love of all that is prisoner... How did I not get an email from you the moment that you heard this? And,
it is tempting to try to... Actually, Natasha, would you like to, in your own inimitable way, second paragraph, just read the first couple of sentences from that point of view? Try
if
not
I, if I don't
try
drop
not,
it first.
To drop the device, because Natasha is now reading this from a tablet, in fact.
Yes. It is tempting to try to explain the prisoner in terms of a single or overriding theory or metaphor. It has, for instance, been seen as an allegorical representation of the battle of the individual against society. A fantasy or house...
A fantasy or It's time for you to take over, Phil. Otherwise we don't know where we're going here. We've got 5 minutes before we go into the next program.
Oh, I'm taking over. Okay, wow, that was a great paragraph. They're exceptional writers, and I can understand why you're having them on the show. But I am reminded of the part of The Prisoner where, number six's character is trying to find out which side runs the village.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, played by the great Leo McKern, basically points out that both sides, both the West and the East, were becoming mirror images of each other. So the question is irrelevant, at which point number six says, the whole world as the village. And number two says, that's my dream. What's yours? And number six says, I'd like to be the first man on the moon. It's a wonderful exchange. But see, my dream is the all of broadcasting as the Midweek Drive. See, that's my thought. So there is no my show and your show, Alex. They're becoming mirror versions of each other. So if this convention organizer is on Chilpack Hollywood Hour, of course, he's already, in some real sense, on the Midweek Drive. Do you follow me?
This is sounding very awesome. Do you feel this is sounding awesome?
And you're number two. We still have no idea who number one is, but we have a pretty good guess. It's Penny Evans.
Natasha.
Yeah, we could.
Yeah. Have you heard your particular item on the second spin-off podcast series from... No, you actually haven't.
Yes, I did.
Did
and
yes.
I didn't stumble at the word hallucination either. Yeah, so.
Exactly. Because it was a hallucination. So always an hallucination. It's always quite difficult and challenging on that sort of basis. Martina, any questions from your good self for Phil? As the youngest of our team here today, somebody who wasn't even born when Buffy the Vampire Slayer launched as we celebrate International Women's Day by staking a vampire and celebrating our Sarah Michelle Gellinus.
I do have a question. Have you seen Buffy?
Have I seen Buffy?
Recently, hanging around the Los Angeles area.
Hilarious.
You know,
I actually thought your question... I am now expecting that Buffy the Vampire Slayer was a theme earlier in the show. Up until your question, Martina, I thought that that was just something Alex was pulling out of the vapor to define how young people are. Oh, these people were born after Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So I expected your question was about to be, have you ever heard of Buffy the Vampire Slayer? So I'm actually one of those rarities in that I'm quite a fan of the original movie on which the series is based, and I never thought that the series captured the sense of comedic fun that the movie had.
Well,
but I'm very much in the ultra-rare minority, what we like to call the cultural elite in this country who are being shipped off to camps. But anyway... so I do remember it. I did watch it, and I have friends who were on it. I've worked with people on it, but it's all about the movie for me.
What a treat he's got in store when he listens to the podcast of the program, then. You know, you've got not only Tara Bennett and Richard Edwards, but also their views on Buffy and Tara's connections with the writing room and so on. It's sort of changed their lives in more ways than one. And my references to The Prisoner, of course, which you can also sort of connect on that basis. It's quite awesome. Eclectic Pulse is coming up very shortly. We've got a big tick towards the Buffy paradigm and to a certain extent to United States Adventure Series. For those mathematical people, you might be interested to know that Rachel Riley...
Ah, side reel!
Yeah.
Side reel!
Exactly, I know. Rachel Riley, who I don't think has actually made it big in the States as yet, but she's pretty awesome over here when it comes to mathematical stuff. Are we aware of Rachel Riley?
Yes.
On the show tomorrow, joining us once again, Rachel Riley, shortly after 9 o'clock, about the Bright Ideas Challenge and STEM subjects and various other factors. So I want a little plug ahead for that. It'll be 1 a.m. still in terms of solar time in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Excellent.
I'm very, very tempted to actually sort of use this sort of action motif to actually go... Which is, of course, the NCIS way of actually saying it's time to move on to a different routine. You get lots of flash-forward, flash-action pieces put together, and even the lines of, has he had a reasonably interesting telephonic link? Can actually have a dramatic sort of impact on its own sort of way.
I don't know how to put this in a friendly enough... audience friendly for all ages kind of way, but that really sounds like someone has gas, that little audio clip.
I'm going to
strongly suggest you shelve that particular sound effect
concept. Okay. Eclectic Pulse is coming up after the news at 7 o'clock. I just wanted to raise that sort of factor. Natasha, would you like to put those last two interrogatives in a show where we've gone Prisoner and Buffy in celebration of International Women's Day with Lily Holloman, of course, the front and centre, you know, and Tara Bennett working through that, and of course Midwick Drybets. Would you like to put those last two questions to Phil, please?
Certainly. Have you enjoyed your telephonic link this evening, Phil?
It felt so brief, but it was so much fun.
That's great. And will you be back with us next week?
I don't think so. Actually, no, I'm not going to be. I am going to try to find you a replacement. Maybe we'll have a prisoner convention organizer take my place. But I will be in meetings next Wednesday.
Aww, you'll be missed.
Well, you know, it's like a lacunae will be left, you know, in terms of a gulf in our broadcast lives. But do you think he'll return?
I hope so.
Because otherwise it's tapping the table and seances and various other things. Very messy.
Well, that could be Australia. Good. Come on. that's a show right there.
Well, I'm going to keep you working before we actually head up to the news with Don't Dream It's Over and Crowded House. Would you like to, Phil, ask Martina Vieca, Holly McGrattan, no, I can't ask Tessa Snart. You know, she again told an untruth. She said, she'll be here after 6 o'clock. No sign at all. Hannah Brown at least sort of said she couldn't make it because she's in meetings, etc. But to Natasha and to Holly and to Kaylee and to Martina, it's over to you, Phil, please.
To do what? By the way, it's still after 6. If she said she's going to be there after 6, she hasn't lied. It's still after 6. She might show up an hour from now. And everything would be... But what is it that I'm supposed to ask? You said, do you want to ask?
Yeah, have they enjoyed the show? Name. Have they enjoyed the show?
Oh, that's great. Yeah, because you couldn't do that. They're sitting there in front of you.
No.
Ladies,
yes.
Have you enjoyed the show with the exception of the last 15 seconds?
Yes.
Good. And they'll be back next
Fabulous.
Week. Splendid. I'm going off to talk Westerns, specifically The Searchers, with Phil Leonis, no less, and more, and Max Steiner and others. We wish you all the very best. To Camo from Nashville, Anna Lewis from Jersey. What a heartrending tale about Toby the Poodle. Wasn't her poodle after all, and yet it was. Thanks to William Coles from Edinburgh and that strangely destructive building that's being taken apart piece by piece. Dylan Rees, of course, with what happened in the Doctor Who wilderness years. Tara Bennett from SFX Magazine with her views on Buffy the Vampire Slayer. Likewise, Richard Edwards. And finally, Phil Leonis, last but never least, for another awesome connection. It's been wild. Ready for next week, girls?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You didn't say bye-bye, Phil. Say bye-bye.
Oh, bye-bye, Phil. The paper today tells of war and war.